I haven't got anything planned like with Raj. You listened to the one I did with Raj.
I did.
It's pretty much just like I had some brief ideas of questions in case I had to say something if there was some dead air.
Yeah.
But other than that, there wasn't really a plan. And I don't know how many people downloaded it. I don't know how many people listened to it.
So. I think there's a beauty in that of just like you don't like with everything is so heavily like stats and analytics and everything now, and it's kind of nice just being like, oh, I just don't know.
Yeah, well, with the sizzle, again, that's another unique thing. I don't track clicks. I don't track opens. I don't track anything except who pays me.
Yeah.
And who signs up for a free trial.
The dream.
Because, yeah, otherwise it's just – I just get too obsessed with it and it's nothing – no content I enjoy is driven by metrics. Like yeah. What do you listen to? What do you watch? What do you read? That's like, oh, this had good metrics. This had a great open rate. I don't know. No one – that's not what makes things good.
Yeah.
It's just what – you know, try and be a bit driven by what you want to do, not by what the data says.
Yeah, for sure. Something that I say – to people a lot at work is like the metrics that we have that like we look at are they also metrics that like the person engaging with the thing
cares about
and it's like I think so much of like modern internet is just broken when people have to say oh, please go like and subscribe. And it's like, because that's not like a natural part of, if someone sees a video and they like it, they're going to go talk to someone about it. They're not going to like, they're probably not going to copy a link. They're probably not going to, you know, comment or like or subscribe or, you
it's
know.
It's interesting to start off with that because I was listening this morning. I had to drive to Tullamarine to pick up a bit for my air conditioner. And I was listening to a podcast with Louis Theroux.
Yep.
And he was interviewing Belle Delphine. Are you familiar right. with her?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a sex worker now, but she used to do like internet pranks and videos, stuff like that. But anyway,
yep.
She makes about £20 million a year on yep. on OnlyFans.
Yeah.
And she was Louis asked her, oh, do you, you know, look into the metrics and stuff like that? Do you, how much analytics do you apply to what you do?
Mm.
And she was like, I had no idea it would be this popular. She had a vague idea that she needed to get attention to her. And the more attention she gets, the more eyeballs and the more the more things she could do based on that because she had more of an audience, just raw numbers. But beyond that,
yep.
she wasn't thinking about any of that. And, yep. she still doesn't. But now it's difficult because she's achieved that success. She doesn't really need to grow and grow and grow because she's already, yeah, I don't know how much bigger that you can get.
Yeah.
But, yeah, again, that's a genre of content that people enjoy, people like, and she's not driven by metrics. The audience doesn't care how much any people, you know, like and subscribe to her. But,
yeah.
again, it's something that she's not – but she had to play that game. She had to get to that level of
yeah.
success and money. She had to, you know – do weird things on the internet to get people to pay attention to. And she fully admits that was pretty much just because she needed the attention.
Yeah.
And now she can monetize those people. And this happens to be the most profitable way to do so.
Yeah. I feel like the like, and there's definitely been like eras of stuff that's like the gaming of the platform is part of how a consumer or a fan or a follower or whatever engages with it. And it's yep. like, you know, trying to make it a bit of a game or whatever. But I think it's just, I don't know if it's because of COVID or just coincided with COVID, but it's just like, I just don't think anyone has the energy for
that anymore.
For the bullshit. Yeah. I'm so tired.
While I was waiting for you, I saw an article pop up on Mastodon. Spotify has like demonetized if you get less than 1,000.
Yeah.
I think it was like an informal thing.
Yeah. So it's less than 1,000 streams.
Yeah.
You don't want to get paid for it, but it's realist, like when you actually look at it, it just means that like, so it's like within a period, right? So it's within a year. But then if the next year you get 100,000 streams, then the 900 or whatever you didn't get from the year before adds to the total.
Okay.
So it's more of like, you know, like, it's like, you know, cash rewards or whatever. It's yep. like, You can't cash it out. You got $5, but you can't cash it out until $10. It's not worth our while to be doing all these tiny transactions. But I think musicians are like very happy to just like jump on and just be like, Spotify is not paying like all these tiny artists. I'm like, look, 1,000 times 0.006005. I'm like, okay, so it's like $6. It's $7.
That's not going to even feed you.
I'm maybe not the most compassionate person to that kind of stuff. I'm like, just if you realize it's not making money, lean into the fact that you don't have to rely on that as an income source. Like, there's so much freedom that you can have with something if you can cut off the thing that's like, this has to be attached to like financial, like, success or progress or income or whatever.
Because that's kind of not what I thought you'd say, because I know, you know, your music's good and I've listened to it, and I know struggle, but like the same with me and the Sizzle, the difficulty in turning what is kind of a commodity into something that you can live off. It's tough, and I would have thought you'd be like, oh, you know, Spotify bastards, they should really be paying for every cent. So, but what you said makes a lot of sense. It's like, yeah, if it's not serving you, then don't give that attention.
And like, so there was another study that came out recently. I think it was either Music Victoria or APRA, who's like the Australian Performance Rights Association, whatever, Royalties Association, whatever. And it was like, of all the artists they surveyed, most artists made less than $6,000 last year from music.
And those are the ones that are registered.
Those are the ones who registered and who kind of gave the feedback. So you can probably assume that they are not super casual, somewhat aware of how much money they're getting from it. Like, they're having a crack at it. But I look at that and I'm just like, well, how many of those artists started the year with the goal of making more than $6,000? Like, I don't feel like you can complain, I didn't make more than $6,000. If you're also not, like, if your plan was to make 60 and you only got 6, that's a huge fucking problem.
Yeah.
If you set out and you're like, I'm not going to budget, I'm not going to, like, you know, make decisions based on, like, to get to this goal of 60 or 10 or whatever it is, and you're just like, oh, I looked at the sums at the end of the year and it was only 6, that's shit. I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, if you're running any business, you have no goals, You're not like making decisions to try and get to a particular outcome. It's like, I don't think just the act of being an artist, you should get $6,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah, true. I mean,
for a hobby.
I mean, there's a thing that, like, back in the UK, I think the 80s and 90s, a lot of the welfare was quite generous, or you could live off that.
Yeah.
And so it spawned a whole like generation of musicians that people love now.
Yeah.
And artists, and was because they could have that time to not earn much, hone their craft, do well.
Yeah.
And now, you know, that's impossible. Living costs so much, the benefits you get are so difficult. It's really hard to make a living doing that.
It's impossible. Well, I mean, it's very difficult, but then also I think it's like, I mean, from that same example of like, okay, welfare was really great. It meant people could engage in the arts, that kind of thing. That's not just people getting into it as musicians. That's like, well, you now have the whole community and you have an audience of people who don't have to worry about, you know, how they're paying the bills and how they're...
And so they could afford to...
So people can actually go to shows.
Pay for records.
Pay for records. And, you know, it's like, it's not just this thing of, oh, maybe we should make, you know, maybe we should pay artists 30 grand a year, 40 grand a year so they can go make stuff. It's like, it doesn't really fix the problem that the economy's fucked and and people's tastes have changed. True. And it's, you know, I think like if your plan then is to like, okay, subsidize living expenses for artists, and then what's the next step? Okay, well, now we have to make concert tickets cheaper so people go. And then what's the next step? Oh, we have to make the merch cheaper. So it's like you just subsidize everything. You're just like fighting the natural flow of the economy.
Yeah.
But it's like there is quite a bit of stuff that I think you can do that is, you know, profitable. It's like, okay, maybe, you know, quote-unquote musician, quote-unquote band, whatever, that looks different. And maybe the artifacts that you're creating that people can kind of latch onto, maybe they look different, you know, maybe it's, but I still think there's like, I still think there's ways of having like meaningful experiences with art that also, you know, money changes hands and it can be worth something.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, from a creative point of view, like just very basic, but I've been making lots of stickers lately and I've just been giving them out to people.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, well, I can't make money off of this really. It's just, you know, he just has some stickers.
Yeah.
And I think at some point that the creative work, it has to be divided into like, is this, like, is this something I'm taking seriously? Like, that I want to have a job doing, do I want to sustain myself doing this and all the work that that entails, which is obviously most time, a lot of it's not playing music or creating art. A lot of it's stuff that is boring or things like that. Or do I just do this as a, like a hobby? Is this an outlet for me to express whatever I want to express rather than, or just to make people happy rather than I need to make a living out of this?
And I think it's, I mean, I think if it's, I mean, okay, so let's say Decryption Sticker Club, scale that up. What does that look like? How do you get that to the point of like making sizzle money kind of thing? It's like very quickly just becomes like, well, now people have expectations. I have to meet those expectations. I just have to like keep doing that same thing. And it's like, if the fun was, I made a sticker, a stupid sticker, and I gave it to someone, they didn't expect it, and it was a surprise, and they could put it up and be like, look at this stupid sticker. It's like, it's so completely opposite to like, you know, a business plan. Or it's like, I work in like, you know, marketing, comms, strategy kind of stuff, and have been doing these like mentoring, like coaching kind of like work on the side. And I'll be talking to people who have like done this, you know, either a short digital course or changing careers or trying to look for work or whatever. And they're like, I want to do this thing, and I could do this. I could make stickers and I could send people an envelope of stickers once a month and charge them $5 and go, go, go. And I'm like, it is very hard from what I've seen. Maybe this is like my just turned 30, but I'm like old fucking cynical, whatever. But I'm just like, I think it's very hard to get to convince someone to spend money on something that they haven't already been spending the money on. But if they have already been spending money on it and you're just giving them another option of that thing in that same category, I think you're super safe. Because I think people are like, you know, maybe they never go to a restaurant. So don't start a restaurant, but maybe you can have like an alternative of some kind, like they're comfortable Uber Eats. Well, maybe you drop off food, like a drop off a meal to them once a week. And it's that same kind of thing of like, don't try get them to like change all their behaviors, try to tap into the behaviors they're already doing. And it's, I think a lot of people are really keen to like, I'm going to change everyone's behavior. And I'm like,
it's tough.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, talking about trying to get money from people through the internet, that's been a challenge I've had for you know, years. And you've been pretty helpful with me to not just bounce ideas off, even though they're in a public space. You're probably the person that replies most with the most care to them. And even though sometimes it's not what I want to hear, it's like, well, that's probably right. I mean, that's like changing. Like, it's hard enough to get people to give you money for something in the first place. There's only a certain amount going around and you have to get it from them. And even if you have something of value that they might want, people don't like subscriptions now. Like, people don't want to keep paying for, like, it's hard to get people to sign up even for free. Like, there's that, even though people may trust me, they don't know that. They're a stranger that doesn't know that. Getting them just to sign up for a free trial is difficult enough. Then getting them to pay me is a difficult thing. And I think that's an issue in all creative people have. Remember, it's like I write, but musicians have the same issue. You know, how do you get them to even hear your stuff? How do you get an artist, all right, I want to show them my drawing or my painting. How do I get them to see it? I think this is what I was talking about with Raj last week again. The internet is just so, the trust is so low. How do you get people to even care about what you're doing?
I think, I think trust is low. I think also the, like, my memories of, like, early internet of, like, which was, like, you know, 2000s family computer, free reign. Like, go do whatever you want. It was very much like I had more attention and more. I guess attention is the right word. I had more attention than there was content to give it to.
Because you had a lot more time to spare.
I had a lot of time. I had a lot of like curiosity. I was like, I'm going to go and look at every single Star Wars fan film on this one Star Wars fan site. And I'm going to consume every inch of it. And now it's like I might watch like two TikToks from someone out of the 10,000 that they've made. And it's like, there's no, it's not even like, it's so impractical to even think I'm going to be like a completionist of something. Yeah. Like I reckon maybe I have like, maybe like between like four and five things that I'm like, all right, I have like, I'm a completionist of, I know I've watched everything that exists and I know I can like watch the one thing or read the one thing or listen to the one thing a week or a month or whatever and stay on top of it. Everything else, I'm just like, I'm tapped out. Like I can't tap in. And I think artists, you need to like, do you want a few people who are like completionist mode that you can really like make something for and hope that, you know, that can bring more kind of completionists along? Kind of like, maybe like King Giz.
Yeah, they're a good example. I've got a friend who actually, I was about to ask them to come chat to them, but then you said you're going to be in the area, so I thought I'll do that first. They love King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Yeah.
And they go to all their concerts,
yep.
Buy all their merchandise, and yeah, they love them. So yeah.
I think there's like that angle, or there's the, like, most people will only watch a percent of what I make. And then you're constantly just trying to appeal and constantly trying to like fuel the algorithm and stuff. And I think what has been, I think it hasn't been very clear where, you know, I think music used to be much more completionist, like much more, or even like you're definitely going to listen to the whole album. Like if you like a single, you're probably going to listen to the whole album.
So and is that not as common now?
No.
I listen to albums. I buy albums. I listen to albums. So I guess that's not as common these days.
If I look on my like Spotify artist profile, I can see how many people who listen to my stuff were like repeat listeners or people who've like heard something of mine, have then gone to my profile, looked at other stuff, or how many of them were essentially transitory. Like they heard it in passing. It was something that just came up on a playlist. Maybe they skipped it, maybe they didn't, whatever. And it's like, a stream from that passive listener is worth the same as a stream from the active listener. Like they pay the same amount.
Is there like a conversion thing there? Like, do you know how many people turn from those passive or the casual listeners into more people that listen to the completionist?
So it's, there's no kind of like clear rates on it. There's definitely different things you can do to try game the different systems to try and like get more people to convert to the long term, but then it's really difficult. There's not really good tools on the platform to then continue moving them through the funnel.
I guess because you're not making a sale, there's no like sale to convert really. It's more just
and
more,
you don't know
more, who, more listening.
You can't go and see a list of like which profiles listen to the song. They're just, it'll be 1,000 people listen. And it's like, who are they? Well, we'll maybe tell you the age, where they live, gender, maybe if they added your song to one of their playlists, it might come up as your songs on this playlist. But it's very difficult to like take that and kind of like build relationships with people.
How did musicians do this, say, like 20 years ago? They didn't.
Well, I think so much of like 20 years ago, I mean, you can play a show, you can be the support band, you can maybe sell 10 CDs and $200. And whereas now it's, you know, you have to kind of like wade through the depths of streaming and try and get on the playlist.
Can an artist get any traction at all without the internet? So let's say you're making music, you've got a band or a solo artist and you want to, you know, you don't use the internet. You don't really like it. Maybe it's an antithesis to what you're trying to put out into the world. Can is that possible, or is it just not? It's just not realistic in 2024.
I think you maybe could, but I think
no Instagram, no Facebook for targeting ads.
It depends on your goals. For
gigs.
If your goals are like, I want to play a covers show once a month, you can probably do that. You just like make friends with the bar owner. You can probably do that. If you're like super kind of clicked into a certain community and you're like, all right, I am going to play, like I know the right people and I know there's a Greek festival in every 3 months. I know I can get booked for that. You could probably kind of build out of that. I think the tricky thing is it's like, it's not so much. I think a lot of what people talk about when they talk about, you know, promoting art and trying to, you know, make money off and that kind of stuff is the like, the conscious, like, I am going to try and do this stunt or this strategy or this plan or whatever. But so much of it is just like, you know, someone saw you play and just wants to work out what your email address is to like book you for a show. Okay, they go to a Facebook or they'll go to, you know, they'll go to an Instagram and they'll look for a button. Like, it's just what, I mean, you could maybe do it without the internet, but it's like everyone's second nature is to just go look on those platforms. So if you're not there, it just becomes like more difficult. And for what? Like,
It would probably be more like a personal choice. Like, I don't like the internet, what it's done to society. I don't want my art to be on there. That kind of extreme kind of take. And then it would be, how do people listen to it? Without, like, again, 20 years ago, I think you could have music or art not be on the internet, and you could still have some kind of following. You could have people would, there'd be ways to find out that it exists. But I'm not sure in 2024, particularly in music, I'm not sure maybe they hear you at a gig at the local bar, and that word of mouth spread. Could that still be possible, like how it used to be back in the 80s and 90s?
I think where it gets tricky as well is it's like your presence online as an artist isn't only just your accounts. Like,
the fan base, the comments.
It could be fan base. It could be, you know, you've reviews. Been booked for a show, so the venue is posting and saying this person is playing here, that kind of thing. So I feel like you could maybe not have accounts, but there would still be so much of like, send us press shots. Oh, this isn't in like the correct format for whatever, or you need to have this, you need to have that. Like, there's still, I think it's just, if you look 20 years ago, whatever, it's like, or even 10 years ago, I mean, there's a lot of bands that I, you know, went to shows for and, you know, had the EP on the disc or whatever, and I can't find them now because they had a MySpace and that was kind of it.
Gone.
And now the platform's gone, and now it kind of seems like, you know, oh, like all these bands, they just kind of existed at the time and now they're gone and there's no real record and stuff. It's like, no, the platform just disappeared. Like, they... Mm-hmm. People have been pretty active in, like, you know, or maybe it was, you know, a particular forum on like a uni website or that kind of thing, and stuff. Just, I think every time I think about like, could you kind of just like scrap platforms? How much do you need it? The more I think about it, the more I realize it's probably more of like a digital conservation type thing, like the way that, like, you know, people preserve like ROMs and video games and that kind of stuff. I think would be better to just do the internet properly and actually be critical about it and think about your engagement with things and your involvement and what you're giving to it, what you're getting from it. I feel like that's the answer to the question rather than I'm just going to completely cut everything.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm repeating what I said with, like, I still love the internet. Like, when I was talking to Raj 2 weeks ago, it kind of made it sound like that I hate the internet and I'm over it. But I mean, I'm still on it. I still love it.
And I love computer.
Yeah, and it's still like the main focus of my life. I write about it for a living. Like, I still get joy whenever I see something on the internet that is interesting and a unique thing. I still want to share it with people and I put it in my newsletter.
Yeah.
So I think the internet, contemplating it, I think the internet will be, there will almost be like a two-tier internet. There'll be an internet for normies. I wish I had a better word, because that kind of means it feels like an exclusionary thing. It's like, oh, no, that's you and I'm different than you, but really we're all the same.
Mm.
And but there'll be people who don't care. They have this internet, they have this phone, mostly nowadays for the internet, and they use it because they have to. They have to use it to interact with the world. If they want to get a pizza delivered, you might have to do it through an app.
Mm.
If you want to look at your banking, you have to do it on the internet. You want news through the internet. You want the latest content everyone else is talking about. It's on the internet. And then there'll be those mainstream platforms. But I think the old internet, you know, 90s, 2000 internet, that's still there's nothing technically why that can't work.
There isn't, but I mean, even back then, there was internet and there was AOL. Yes, and it was like, it was Eternal, a separate...
The
like,
Eternal September, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like... And now, I think it'll... I mean, I really hope that there's kind of less of these, you know, I'm going to go, you know, log on to the internet and do things and you are only within the Facebook app or you're only within...
like five different companies, like know, Microsoft, and Google, Facebook, and just rotate around them.
Yeah, and I think it's... I think like one of my favorite parts of like the work I do is I don't think it'll ever be possible for me to get to that point of abstraction where, you know, internet to me is just YouTube app or it is just this. Like I feel like because the platforms are so like barely kind of covering the fact that it's all just HTML or it was all just like the actual formats of underneath it. And I feel like because they're not these like all encompassing, you know, everything is kind of like obfuscated and every, like it's impossible to kind of look under the hood. I think it's, yeah, I'll be able to kind of, you know, keep writing, like know what a file system is. Like my sister's only a few years younger than me and she doesn't know where files
that's the curse of the smartphone.
Yeah.
It's very easy to use. It gets people on the internet, but what are they doing with that?
Yeah,
it's just not. I worry that there'll be a generation of people. Okay, I heard it again in the interview with Belle Delphine. She had no interest in making her own platform. She had no interest in existing outside this. To her, the internet was these platforms.
Yeah.
And I think she says she's 24, 25. So she's been on the internet since. She says she's been on the internet a long time, since she was 14.
Yeah.
So she's only ever known these platforms as the internet. And I worry, will in like say in 20 years, when I'm 60 years old, will I still be able to have a weird internet experience? Will there be a generation of 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds that are making fun, interesting things outside of these platforms?
Yeah.
I hope so. I hope the platforms just kind of die out of boredom and no one goes – like on Facebook now, again, you go on Facebook, it's just junk. No one's actually doing trash. Anything creative there or fun there. But then where are they doing it?
20 years Gmail let people receive the sizzle emails.
That's this legitimate thing.
You didn't send them a Gmail. You tried to send them an email. No. So, this is only a Gmail platform.
Yeah, could be. I mean, it's to their credit, they're one of the better ones. I mean, it's Microsoft that are really giving you a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
and I think I wouldn't be surprised if at some stage you're like, look, spam is just so bad, you have to use one of these like a certified email provider.
Yep.
And the cost already for email for me is almost like $100 a month. It's almost like $1,500 a year in Australian dollars.
Yep.
That'll just go up and up even more for something that's really, it's a standard.
Yep.
If I ran a server myself, it'll cost me like $5 a year.
Yep.
But I can't do that without risking poor delivery, which is a real issue even though I am paying. It'll just get worse probably.
But so, then if you did go, like, let's say the sizzle wasn't an email, and let's say the sizzle was TikTok content, well, then it's like you don't know if people are getting it anyway because it's just like
left to the whims of the algorithm.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's I have finally convinced my dad to get a new computer. He's been he's been using the 2011 MacBook Air. That's
some good mileage.
Some very good mileage. Yeah, I bought it after finishing high school and ran it hard for a few years, doing like video editing and really, really pushing it. and sold it to him for like, I think it was like $300 or something. It was a deal. And he's got like a Thunderbolt hub like stuck to the back of the screen with like 6 2-terabyte portable hard drives. Nah. And that's his whole Plex server.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And it's like all strapped to the screen of his MacBook Air. I'm like, and it's like, it's finally hit a point where it's like, you know, Safari won't let him log on to the bank website.
Because the version's too old.
So we're finally doing updates. And it's like, it's been super interesting talking to him and because he doesn't, you know, I think most people, like what you were saying before of like normie internet, people don't, I think most people aren't kind of like, don't have any reason to think critically about the platforms they're using.
It just exists.
Files they're using. And he's in this interesting kind of, you know, one foot in like either camp of like, you know, he loves having a hard drive plugged into a computer and the file being there when he clicks it. But then on the other hand, he's like, oh, there's a cool show on Netflix, but it's like, how do I get that to my Plex library? I'm like, well,
that's illegal in some
you
countries.
You can't download it. Yeah. Like, you can't, like, it's a different thing. He's like, I want the file. I'm like, well, yeah everyone well,
here's,
does.
Here's how
but
you
that's
use
not,
it. Here's like, how BitTorrent works.
There's no, yeah. And it's like, and he's very, very comfortable with like torrenting and that kind of stuff. But it's just like, I'm paying for it. Why can't I have the file? Mm. And I'm like, because it's, there isn't an MP4. It's like so abstracted and so like the numbers coming through the pipes are not at all the same as what you're talking about.
I mean, that's the whole thing with people. I read articles about it. I don't know if it's true or not, but they say like the younger people are looking into physical media more. Like they're buying Blu-rays, yet I see the sales stats and they're just dropping and dropping and dropping. So I don't know what that future looks like. At least for content. For that kind of media, physical media seems it'll be like a niche thing. Like seems to be. I read an interview with the Umbrella who run Broly. They're like one of the main Australian distributors of like cult and indie films, and they said most of their physical media business comes from the collectors. So if they don't make it like a steelbook, like a fancy, you know, the graphics on it and stuff like, or like a collector's edition with tons of features, and no one buys it. So that's what he thinks is the future of physical media. So there'll be fewer releases, but those releases will
the average cost would be higher.
Much higher and way more effort put into them because that's who's buying it. Yeah. The average person's not buying a disc just to watch it on their TV at home. It's a collector who wants it for in perpetuity because they want the best version. They want all the cool stuff.
It's super interesting that like I didn't think we'd kind of hit the point with like streaming platforms being so constrained with what
and
quality
and being upset with them.
Yeah, it's like I really thought we were a long way away from people from like streaming quality being noticeably bad. Like, but it's again, it just feels like as soon as COVID started, they were like, "Whoa, we can't keep up with this. Like, this is we do not have the venture capital money to like artificially stretch our bandwidth any further." I remember the news or whatever of like I think it was Netflix dropped their like the bit rate and they're like
I'm living through it and I was like what the hell happened
and just like the dodgy tricks of like you pause it and then it loads a high bit rate frame when it's paused and then you hit play again and it all goes back to shit so you can't pause it and try and compare it and I
honestly thought it would end up like music. Music, I don't pirate music anymore. I either buy it on CD because it's cheap or listen to it on Spotify and I've got what I need.
Yep.
Whereas I used to pirate music like a madman back in the day. Like I used to have folders. You remember those like lockers? They'd get like a case, like a book, like a big trunk of CDs full of MP3s.
Yeah.
You know, I used to have heaps, but I don't need it anymore because it's all online or I can buy it cheap on CD. But for TV shows and movies, they've all got their own little individual platforms. And I thought it would be like they would license their content out. Someone like HBO or Warner Brothers would license it out to Netflix or to Apple or to Google. And then you can just more or less it all have
access
the same
it
size.
In that system that you like.
Because if you go to Apple Music and Spotify, more or less it's the same library.
More or less.
There's rare. It's rare to have things that are only on each one and exclusive to that platform.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think it'd be a very different. I think people would pirate a lot more if it was like, oh, we need the, I need the Sony BMG streaming platform. Oh, I need the Warner Brothers streaming platform. I need the like, the indie platforms, the Bandcamp platform, and all that kind of stuff. And so it's like,
I'm surprised that didn't, you know, warn the music studios, hey, this is what you should do. Instead, they went the opposite way. Maybe they saw what the music industry profits went to, and like, nah, this is not for us. We want to.
I think it was the that Apple, like all those agreements kind of enabled it, stem from like the iTunes store. And it was like, even back in the day, it was, I remember iTunes store of like all the music's there, but movie availability was super patchy. And it was like, as soon as that deal went through on music, everyone else pumped the brakes and was like, whoa, I don't know about this. We don't want to make, we don't want like a tech company to have the control over the content again.
But then,
now it's gone the other way.
They shot themselves in the foot by going, well, now no one wants to pay for our stuff.
Yeah.
It's in a weird format. There's too many platforms to choose from. If I just had to pay $40 a month for Apple TV, but I had in the content of the legacy media companies, so the main studios, I'd pay that. So they could get more out of that than what they're getting now, maybe.
I think there's like, they've just lost so much like trust of like, if you had that membership, the thing you want to watch isn't going to go away.
Yeah.
And I think that's what like, I mean, like the early years of Netflix, it was like Netflix has The Office and it was there for like a decade.
And I know I can go back to
and
it. Watch
I know
it
I can go
like.
Back and watch it. And it was so much easier to just keep that subscription running. But I think as soon as it started kind of feeling a bit more ephemeral and things come and things go, and especially like, you know, like Disney getting rid of stuff that they made and they put up and then less than a year later it's gone. It's like,
and that's their own, like there's no excuse for like,
no,
we haven't got the rights to it.
Nah, it's, it's very odd. And I think, I got my Newsnet set up. All up and running thanks to your blog post. And yes,
that is now my most popular blog post of all time on that blog.
I could totally see why. Because I had tried to like, I'd installed Radar before and was like trying to click through it. And I'm just like, I'm not getting, like something's not clicking here. And it was like, I'd never found something before that explained like the difference between like the trackers and the servers. And I'm just like, it all makes sense now.
Well, I tried to write it from the point of view, like you used to BitTorrent.
Exactly.
What is this Usenet thing? And a lot of data articles or like the tutorials focused on, this is how you install the app. This is how you, you know, log in and stuff. That's fine. You need that. But this is just like, what the hell is it?
Just like
take a step back.
The definitions of each thing, how they work together. Yeah. It wasn't very long after I worked that out of following your steps, it wasn't very long before I'm like, all right, now it's time. 8-bay drive enclosure, dedicated Mac Mini, let's go.
That happens to a lot of people. I've definitely been there. I recently upgraded my internet to 1,400. So I've got 400 up now.
Bonkers.
And I'm thinking of bringing back a Plex server for the punters, for the public.
I love the idea of the Plex server, but I also am just like, have nostalgia for the old, like, so my very first pirating stuff, you know, having access to art and that kind of thing was KDX, like old school KDX.
Was that on the Mac?
Yeah.
Was it a Mac only app, I think?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Java. So it might have worked on a bunch of stuff, but that was like, it was like peer-to-peer kind of stuff. And it was dog slow and you could only download stuff from like the people in your address book. And my uncle like gave me a bunch of contacts of like people of like, you know, accounts that he knew. And I'd go on and I'd be like, oh, someone's added like Gorillaz Demon Days. And I'm like, let's go. And it was like, that's the first album I ever like got. And because it was like, got it from
mine's
someone.
A bit more embarrassing. I think the first one I downloaded was Hanson. It was a Hanson album back in the 90s. Back
that's
in my
so
dialer.
Funny.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the first album I bought, like the actual physical album was Avril Lavigne.
Okay.
Which I think has aged well.
Yeah, that has some staying power. That's still
I go back, I've like gone back to it in like the last couple of years. I'm like, oh, this holds up really well now. Okay. But like There was a decade there where I was like, oh, I'm not going to tell anyone this.
It's a shameful sin. My first album I bought was just a good album, Frog Stomp by Silverchair.
Oh, hell yeah.
So that's aged really well. So that's I'm proud of that. And I got that. That was through a CD club. I don't know if you're old enough to remember this.
Yeah.
On the back of magazines, they'd be like, you'd pay. I don't know how it worked. I just remember seeing free CD. So I filled in the form, sent it off. But then apparently they sent my parents like a bill for something. And then they never told me, but they just cancelled it.
Yeah.
So I was concerned. I got this free CD. I'm like, this is awesome.
And but it's like a subscription.
It is, yes. It was a subscription. The first one's free. Yep. Then you got to pay each month for it and you got to pick
what
you
want.
It's
like the ringtone scam.
Yes, yes.
Text to get a ringtone, but then your phone gets billed
every month.
You get a $5 text message bill every month.
So yeah,
I feel like the shared Plex server. I like the idea of that kind of like community sharing and like
a curation almost of like, this is what I think is good.
But I want to download the file. I want to like add it to my library. Yeah,
if Plex had that feature, that would be
there was
cool
a thing,
for us, but maybe bad for them.
Yeah, there was a thing. It doesn't work anymore, but there was someone who was making a Chrome plugin where you open Plex and go to someone's library and then you can click the Chrome plugin and it would download the file instead of
streaming
it. Yeah.
Because technically it is just downloading it when it streams it.
Exactly.
So you want to just save the file. Yeah.
And this is maybe ironic or backwards or whatever, because I've been having so many like buffering issues with my Xbox as my Plex client. Series S. Yeah. It's wired, and then every now and then it just like I just have to restart it and then it runs fine. But if I'm like streaming something remotely and it buffers or something, I'm like, oh, that wouldn't be happening if it was like on my drive.
File. Yeah.
And so I love the like collecting and sharing and that kind of stuff, and it's if I find a movie and I want to share it with a friend or whatever, I'm like, go in and like change all the metadata, put it on Dropbox.
That's what I made. I have
like movie club.
Yeah, I had a few friends who wanted to like, you watch so many movies because they see on my letterbox. Like, I watch a lot, and they're like, oh, well, I want to watch some of these, and I'm like, they're on my Plex. So watch it on Plex. They didn't add like it didn't work half the time, even though I had plenty of bandwidth. Or they just didn't know how to get it onto their TV.
Yeah,
they didn't want to buy a Chromecast. They just—it's just like kind of like your dad. They didn't know how to do the next step to get it on there.
Yep.
I thought, look, I'll make it as simple as possible. I'll make an old school website, HTML website, and just put the video on there.
Yep.
And that worked perfectly. People watched it. People liked it, but it cost me a fair bit of money. It's the problem for the bandwidth. But I think that piracy of, because again, that's 100% illegal. There's no way that's fair use.
No defensible.
No, it's like, no, you put it up there for anyone to watch with no permission. Yeah. So, and they could just download it too if they wanted. So that's illegal. But that piracy of that media is kind of the only way. If you want to build taste in that, if you want like a long-term customer of, say you're a label or a studio and you want a long-term customer to buy stuff for the rest of their lives, I don't know anyone who I consider that has taste in art or creative stuff that isn't also a phenomenal pirate. Like, it just can't be done. If you're paying for things legally for that's how you get it, you're restricting yourself to such a small portion of what's out there, because you can only no one's spending $10,000 a month. Like, if I had to pay for the movies that I watch, it would be at least $1,000 a month.
Yeah, it's, and I wonder. I felt like, you know, when I had like streaming platforms and stuff, it was like, well, I'm paying for this, so, you know, that will have the same feeling as when I was younger and going to the shops and buying the DVD and coming home and I can't break it because then I can't watch it. And it's like that kind of like relationship with the thing. But I felt like streaming, it's like everything is worth nothing because I can get any of it at any time. But pirating something, it almost feels like there's more value in that thing, because I'm like, this is taking up 100 gig of space on a drive that I'm paying to keep powered, that, you know, I have to maintain the setup, I have to keep things working, and it's like I had to go and like find that particular edit, that particular like remux of that particular like cut, and it's like I feel so much more attached to like the, you know, like 2160p rip of like director's cut Gladiator, and it's like that's I wouldn't know where to go buy that. Like even if I wanted to go spend $20 and like have something, it was like I wouldn't even know how legally I could go from I don't have this thing and now I want to have the file on a drive.
Yeah. I mean, I think for that purpose, you can just buy the disc from JB Hi-Fi, but
and then rip it.
Yeah, you can rip it. Yeah,
yeah.
But that's expensive. Like,
what do I do with the disc? Like, I'm not even using the disc.
You put it on the shelf as a nice decoration. That's what I do with my Blu-ray discs.
Yeah, so, I guess.
Because I mean, I still spend at least on like physical discs, maybe about $200 a month. Like, I usually buy 3 or 4 a month as a little treat to myself. With that adds up. I try not to think about it. You know, I have to add it all up per month. But to me, without piracy, I wouldn't have bought those discs because it'd be like I wouldn't have that that habit and that culture of watching things, having favorite things.
Yep.
If I just had to rely on what was on TV or on streaming services, the algorithm would be telling me what I would like. And a lot of it I don't necessarily gel with and I would just tune out.
Well, and a lot of the stuff that I like doesn't like go on streaming platforms here at the same time as elsewhere.
Well, yeah,
and it's almost more work to like fuck around with a VPN to get access and not have it get cut off halfway through to like watch something on US Netflix or US Hulu or whatever. Yeah. And it's then you have to now I need a US credit card to pay for the US and it's just like gets messy. I think it's like, I guess like circling back to where we started with like artists and that kind of thing and like music, I think something that is really important that I don't hear most artists kind of mention is like, okay, so like you're not making much from the streaming. You could play shows, you could do some stuff, but like I just feel like you can't complain about not making money if you're not giving people ways to give you money.
Yes.
And I think that's such a big part of it. And I think with music, there was like a really long time where, you know, maybe more people were on labels and labels would look after that kind of thing. Or there was, if you were independent, you knew, I can just make some CDs and sell them and I'll get enough money to kind of scrape things through. And it's like, I think the artists that I see who are really putting critical thought into what are the ways that I am enabling someone to give me money, like most of the artists I listen to, if I wanted to give them $20, be like, I like this, I'm going to give you $20. It's hard to find a way to give them that. I can't go on Spotify and say, I'm going to give you a tip. If they have a Bandcamp, I could go and maybe buy a digital thing.
And even Bandcamp's in a bit of a perilous spot. Like, I don't know if that will last a year.
Exactly.
Is Squarespace the option for a lot of these artists? But even then, you're still tied to Squarespace.
Yeah, and it's like so much of it is really tied to a subscription. But if you think of, you know, like I haven't seen any artist do this, but it's like, here's my Pay ID.
Yeah,
send me $20 on Pay ID,
and I'll post you
and put your email address or an address in something, and I'll send you something. I'm not even going to tell you what I'm going to send you, but. Here's the $20 dip.
I would love that for like The Vegetator. Like, they're one of my favorite bands, and they're on Bandcamp because since they broke up with their label like 15 years ago, they've done a lot more independent releases and they're all on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
But I'd love to just give them like, here's $10 a month.
Yeah.
And whatever you do, I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to at least try it out. I might not be my favorite.
Yeah.
It might not be as good as, you know, your stuff from the 90s. But I still care a lot about that band. And I think, there's no easy like mechanism for that. Like, if you're, because most artists are not, they don't want to fuck around with payment gateways and code and
running
a website and things like that. They just want to do what they do best. And
I
think that might market. I think they understand marketing probably better than most kind of tech people. You reckon, or am I just?
I think
projecting my.
I think they understand. I think to be on social media at the moment, you understand hype or you understand reach. But I think most people don't understand, like, then capitalizing on that.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine to make something that's going to reach a lot of people, but then what do you reach them for?
Yeah.
Like, if you're not reaching them for anything in particular, if you're not like, be like, I want you to watch this to then move you to the next stage. If you're constantly just at the reach stage, that's like,
there's more and more people.
That's top of the funnel.
Followers, like, and eyeballs only.
It's like, where does it go from there? Yeah. Something I talk about heaps in like the work I do is like the idea of like vanity metrics. And it's like so many companies want to make number go up, but can't say what the value of the number is. They can't say the, you know, what they do with the number once it goes up. Like there's nothing. It's just, well, number go up, more reviews, more this, more that. And it's like, stop, slow down, actually think about it. It's like, what's the point of having, you know, if a stream's not worth anything on Spotify, what's the point of getting on a playlist that's going to get you 20,000 streams if that doesn't go anywhere? And if you can just be like, I'm not even going to think about that as something that I'm aiming for, it probably is going to free you up enough to make something a bit more interesting that, you know, doesn't have to be contained within the format of what is like acceptable on Spotify. And
I mean, again, like I can bring it back to the Sizzle because that's the reference point that I have.
Yeah.
Like I don't use Facebook for the Sizzle. I barely use LinkedIn. I don't use TikTok or Instagram.
Yeah.
Because I'm just not, I don't want to participate in those platforms. There could be value there for me. There's obviously people there.
Yeah.
And because there's so many people that could be converted back into, say, 1% end up being people who might care what I think.
Yeah.
But I generally don't like those businesses. I write about them so often, about the things that they do. I don't want to participate.
Yeah.
I don't want my creative output to put a wanky term on what I do, which is just a newsletter. But that it is creative output attached. I don't want to give those bastards a piece of me.
For sure.
I like being kind of off the grid almost. Like I'm not participating in those structures that I think, you know, oppress the internet. I need to put it in that scape.
And like, I mean, I, you know, from some angles and some of the work I do, some of my responsibilities work in like marketing, which I, every passing day, I think it is less of an accurate description of like, of most of the work I have to do. But it's like, I think so many of the conversations I have are like, you know, value, like what value can we get to this? What value can we like give to this? Like, you know, how can we benefit from being on a platform? Or a lot of those kinds of conversations have come up, I guess, like day job stuff from, you know, like Twitter imploding. And it's like, well, do we jump to Threads now? I'm like, well, we could, but like, what value are we going to get from it? And it's like, well, I don't know. And it's like, well, what value are we getting from Twitter? It's like, well, I don't know. Mm. And I think the main thing with like almost every platform, like social platforms or having a website or directory listings, like whether that's like industry specific or just Google Maps, all that kind of thing, I think so many of them are, because people are tapped out and exhausted, I think the best you can do with all those platforms now is just like risk mitigation. Mm. Like make sure the phone number on Google Maps is correct so that you're just mitigating that risk. You're not, there's almost no opportunity to like game Google Maps, like game it for reviews or the like gaming it for like positions or, you know, game like posting updates to it to try and like rank higher or whatever. It's like, look, someone probably knows the name of your business and just wants the details for that business, and there's very little value to gain from like trying to game all this shit. But you can maybe give someone the right information and make them feel at ease and don't make it look like, you know, the business has been abandoned and that kind of stuff. But I'm not quite sure yet where like the next thing of where there'll be value. Because I think the, you know, TikTok's kind of like the hypey platform at the moment.
I think that's got a short lifespan.
Also it's hard to convert to like other things. It's like you can build up a profile within TikTok land, but then what?
Mm.
You're stuck in TikTok land. It's like kind of hard to like, you know, convert out of that and move that and attention out of
that's
that
a common thing with most, like, say on, you know, on Instagram, like,
for sure,
good, like, they have a shop thing in there, right? No one really uses it.
No. Well, even getting someone to click a link to leave the platform, it's like, I think is gonna, it, that's the functionality's there, but like, you're not really able to drive traffic from those kind of platforms unless you're spending money to like try and fight their algorithms to, you know, go against the tide kind of thing. Yeah. But I think just like people doing stuff that's interesting to them and who are, you know, still tapped into like following what other people are doing and looking at, you know, following other people and just being consistent seems to be like
the way to go.
Yeah.
It's just harder and harder to find those people. You know, I mean, I've seen people try and they get discouraged when they might see people on those platforms getting all these videos attention. And then you try and do your own thing outside of that system. And it's like, you know, why am I bothering? No one pays attention.
Yeah.
It's just hard to get, people are so conditioned to using those platforms. Even people who know it's bad, want to get out of it, want to find interesting things. I think they still don't know how to do that. I think it's almost the lost art on how to use the internet as opposed to I can use Instagram, I can use TikTok.
It definitely is. And I think the like, you know, timeline-ification of everything, like everything's date stamped, everything is like, you know, it's like, what? Show me the newest thing, not show me what the best thing is. Like, show me the things I liked again. It, like, there's nothing of that. It's all just like, here's the newest. And it's like, you're fighting for like quality versus newest. Yeah. And I think something that I've kind of like hit with like my music stuff, because for a while I was like, I started in like 2017.
Yep.
And it was like, all right, I'm going to put out a single. And it was constantly, I just need to like keep having a new thing. And I was like kind of looking around, I'm looking at stuff and I'm just like, everyone's trying to just like, you know, keep growing and everything needs to like, you know, number go up, kind of just brain worms.
Yeah.
Awful, like what I'm like,
and I fall into that a lot. Sometimes you probably see me whinge on the forum or on Mastodon. Oh, the numbers went down by a bit. You know, the numbers. I need to grow. If it's not growing, it's dead. And I kind of need to possibly recalibrate that point of view just for my own sanity. Because that line goes up mentality ruins not just, you know, possibly little things like this. So it ruins almost everything in society, housing. You know, food production, like, if it's not growing, it's dead. And sometimes, like, well, no, like, if people like it, it can exist, it can continue.
Mm.
If it can steady and slow is not necessarily a bad thing.
And if you look at, I mean, this is maybe too big picture, whatever, but you look outside of anything man-made, nothing just continually grows. Like, everything is in seasons. Everything's like high for a bit, low for a bit, high for a bit, low for a bit. Maybe sometimes uncharacteristically high, maybe sometimes uncharacteristically low. And with my music stuff, I was like, all right, instead of constantly trying to make it grow, constantly trying to make it bigger, what happens if I go through a phase where I do everything I can to kill it and do everything I can to try and destroy it? Like, what happens then?
Yeah.
And not enough people unfollowed. So I just made a whole new account and I'm just like, nah, fuck off. Like,
I'm done with this.
Make it. And it's like, and I think, and that was like, that's not sustainable at all. Like, that's not, I'm not making money doing that at all. And it's not a stunt. I'm never going to come back to it and say it was a part of anything really. But I think it was just a good thing to kind of get through my head of like, well, now I've had a season of, I don't care if people are, you know, if I'm like, I don't care if I'm posting, I don't care if what I'm posting is like making people want to engage or follow or spend money or anything like that, because then I feel like mentally it frees me up for like, all right, well, going into like album mode, I can have like a solid 2 months of everything's palatable. Everything is like not antagonistic. It's like, and I can do that for a season.
Yeah.
And then once that's done, maybe I just delete the account again and I can go back to, you know, and just having that. It doesn't have to be continually growing and growing and growing, but maybe I can have a period of I'm going to grow a thing, and then I have a period of now I'm going to burn it down.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that is, it never gets to that. It'll never get to that point of, you know, like I need to be like the in my 70s legacy band.
Yeah.
Can I play my biggest tour? Like when I'm like, who cares?
Yeah.
Can you make a new band at that age and get like 200 people to come? Yeah. Like that's, I feel like that is a more interesting and a healthier like way of, it's very not capitalist.
Yes.
But I think it's the only way to not die.
It was you who was telling me that, like, you know, I think I was depressed about the Sizzle not growing enough or something that I promotion I ran just didn't go well.
Yeah.
And you were telling me that it doesn't really matter. Like the Sizzle might not be the thing that makes you money, but it could open doors for other things.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that relationship, again, creative people might have with whatever it is they're doing. I think for this audience, it would probably be more like, for the people listening, something they do with their coding skills. You know, for example, they might have a project that they've been working on and they're afraid that it might not make any money, so they don't do it, which I think is a bit sad because I don't know what that project could be. It could be something fun that could make someone smile, could make someone happy. It could just be something nice to exist in the world.
Yeah.
Because it has to be attached to, will that make me money? Will I be able to live off this?
Yeah.
It doesn't get done. And I think I would like, even for me personally, it's not to do more things that are not, I don't have to turn that hobby into a job or into a business. I can just do that thing because it's fun. It might make someone happy. Someone might enjoy it. And I can kill it at any time if it stops bringing me joy or if I don't want to do it anymore. Or I can just live on its own life and exist and just not be updated. It can just belong to the internet as something, as like a piece of archaeology that's there for 50 years and it happened. That's it. There's no need to, all right, if it doesn't grow, if it doesn't make money, it's pointless.
Yeah. I think if you can, and if you can have that, like get to that point where it's like, all right, I'm doing a thing. It's going to take 200 hours and I could try and monetize it. But if I monetize it, it'll take 800 hours. But once it's done, I know the next thing I do is much more likely to make money.
Yeah.
Would you just get it over and done with, get the 200 hours done so you can move on to the next thing, which maybe the priority of it is I'm going to make money on this, or I'm going to like it, that's, I'm not trying to like, you know, retroactively add this goal that doesn't really fit the thing that I want to do. Or like I had that for a long time where I was like, you know, I wanted to do music stuff and I knew it wasn't going to make money. But I was like, oh, I have to do a degree first. And I like tried to go to uni and I just kind of kept wanting to do music stuff. And then, you know, tried to got a full-time job and like couldn't just really give it my attention. And I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to do the thing, get it out of my system. And then I know I can move along and I'll have like a good portfolio piece. I know I can like factor in these kind of like marketing aspects and design aspects. I'll document it properly. I'll get something out of it. And then it'll be easier to get a better paid job in marketing because I'll have this like portfolio case study thing. So I can like make the most of it. And then it was like, and I told people, you know, around me at the time, and I was like, I'm quitting my job to do this thing. And I think people interpret it as the, you know, like, quit your job and throw yourself into it and force yourself to make it work. And I'm like, no, I'm going to have another job in 2 months' time, but I just have to like,
have the space
to get it out of my system and then I can like move on. And it was like, I think a lot of people kind of just get stuck at that point of like, you know, I want to do the creative project, but it isn't making money. So I'm going to work at like a cafe and continue to try to like force my music project to be this thing it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're just like failing at everything. Yeah. Like you've got a shit job, you've got a shit band, you're trying to like, you know, get money from shit people to fund stuff that now you don't even enjoy because all of it sucks. And it's like, well, just what if you gave yourself a month and you're like, all right, I'm going to like save up for a bit. I'm going to give myself a month and I'm only thinking about music in that month. I'm going to make something. I'm going to play the show and then it's done.
Yeah.
Get it out of your system and just like let it be what it needs to be and then you can move
on. And then the worst case in that scenario is you did something that hopefully you're proud of, that was fun, happy, and it you move on. Like it's, yeah. it's like I think there's value to having something you've worked on that you're proud of. I think again for a lot of tech people, there's this constant like maintaining and yeah. businesses as usual work.
Yep.
They don't really have something that they can go like a confined or like a structure that's like I did this. This is a thing that I did. I'm very proud of, and they can yep. show it off. I think there's more just because they're so busy with their work. I think if they could just take again a few months off, build something, or even dedicate themselves to build something that's for no purpose except to have something for themselves
yeah.
to build on. I think that's something that builds their own confidence. And I love those projects. I love those things. Just like, yeah. I want to see that. I want to see my friends do that kind of work.
Yeah.
And because I know what they're capable of, but capitalism, I guess, keeps them down. Like the need for,
yeah.
you know, that work ethic in the back of their mind. If this is not making me money, why am I doing this? And I think the world would be a better, the internet would be a better place if more people just did, like, use their skill, particularly like the web developers that I know.
Yep.
Just did weird, crazy things with their skills. I don't know what that could be.
Yep.
View their skill as an art rather than a job, I think would be I'd love to see more of that kind of stuff that the internet I think used to have, whereas now it's just it's too professionalized, I guess.
Yeah, and it's you know, like I've been able to, like, with music stuff, I've been able to, like, make a thing, release it, that's it, cool. And it's it is very tempting to be like, oh, but what if I was posting each day and I was able to get attention back on that old thing that I made ages ago?
What if I pay for some ads on Instagram to promote this track?
What if I do this? What if I do that? And it's like, it is, I think as soon as it comes to something that is like distributed through the ways that people, through the same kind of platforms and methods that people are like, you know, posting or trying to game systems and that kind of stuff, I think it can get a lot murkier and, that kind of like, I don't know if this is a good analogy or not, but I feel like it's the like, I'm going to do acid once and just like have a fun trip versus I'm going to become a heroin addict. Yeah. And it's like, are you having like a fun experience or are you making like a lifestyle change? And yeah. I'm like, I feel like every single time something cool happens on the internet or whatever, it's like, oh, it's a cool thing. But then it's like, oh, but now like lifestyle change. And I don't think any of the lifestyle change stuff from the website, from the internet has been good.
No.
So much of it is awful.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, I've tried lots of that in the past and just it gets to a point where it's like, this isn't fun anymore.
Yeah.
And it's not making that much money. Why am I bothering? And I just want to see more weird stuff on the internet, more things outside of those platforms that are just done purely because someone wants to be proud of it or someone wants to make someone else smile out of it. I don't think there's enough of that in the world generally, let alone on the internet.
Yeah.
I think that could be a good place to stop this podcast. It's been going on for an hour now. I don't like podcasts that go for more than an hour. So
this isn't the talk show? ATP?
They are. I hate Marathon. Them so much, those podcasts.
I finally like properly unsubscribe from the talk show. Yeah, unsubscribe from Daring Fireball.
Free your mind. There's better things in the world.
I don't need Vision Pro.
I still want to buy it when it comes out and play with it, but because I haven't tried it out yet, because I need to get the prescription inserts, so I haven't done it. But anyway, that's a whole different podcast, whole different thing. All right.